We are in season three of the Sermon on the Mount. Someone said to me yesterday, I said, we got about 8 more weeks, maybe 10 weeks, we'll see, 8 or 10 weeks to finish this. We started on in September, the first Sunday in September of 2023 is when we started on it. Someone said to me yesterday, they said, so you're taking like 3 years to do what Jesus taught in just like 2 chapters, you know? There's a passage of scripture in the book of John, chapter 12, that is just dear to me and has been for years. And it says this, is my paraphrase of it, but it says that Jesus knew what the Father wanted said and how the Father wanted it said. Not only did he say what the Father wanted him to say, but he said it in the way the Father wanted him to say it. Well, if you think about what we go through the Sermon on the Mount, we're not just listening. I mean, we can grab a hold and go, oh, Jesus, he's a great teacher. He's, you know, he's saying Jesus, you know, his own words. But he's actually, if that scripture is true in John 12, he's actually saying what the Father wanted said, and he's saying it in the way the Father wanted it said. So these are not just, I mean, these are important words. The Sermon on the Mount has been called the greatest sermon by the greatest teacher of all time. That's what it's been called. And you could spend a lifetime tearing the whole Sermon on the Mount apart, digging into it, you know, verse by verse, chapter by chapter, piece by piece, and never really ever get to the bottom of it. But it is. It's the greatest teaching by the greatest teacher. It was his first teaching, his longest teaching. And, you know, sometimes people use the word GOAT, like they'll talk about, you know, Tom Brady being the GOAT, the greatest of all time, or Michael Jordan, and there's this argument between Michael Jordan and LeBron James, who's the greatest of all time. Well, the reality is there's only one GOAT, and his name is what? Jesus. There's only one GOAT in this world, and his name's Jesus. He's the greatest of all time. So we're going to jump into this. And sometime, just again, because we started this 2 years ago, let me just give you a tiny bit of background. Jesus was about 30 years old, and he left home, felt it was time for him to begin his traveling ministry. He left home, and he began traveling across the countryside, and he went to the Jordan River, was baptized by John the Baptist, and then left immediately, directed by the Spirit. Immediately after his baptism, he went into the wilderness. He was tempted, fasted, and prayed, and was tempted for 40 days. And after he came out of that temptation time, out of the wilderness, he came back to where he was residing at the time, kind of his hometown, his adopted hometown. It wasn't Nazareth, but his adopted hometown, came back to there. And crowds of people were following him everywhere he went. Matter of fact, the crowds kept growing. It's almost like day by day the crowds grew that were following him. Massive. You know, when he gets to feed the 5,000, you know, it's 5,000 men. And then it says plus women and children. So who knows, 20,000, 25, whatever. You know, just a huge crowd. Well, at this time when he gives the Sermon on the Mount, there's a whole crowd around him, but he only at this point has 4 disciples. He's only called 4 of the 12 that we would call apostles. He's only called 4 of them. And that's who he's giving this sermon to. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 7, beginning with verse 1. Would you stand and read these 3 slides with me? This is the passage we're going to dig into today. So let's read it with some gusto out loud. Do not judge others, and you will not be judged. For you will be treated as you treat others. The standard you use in judging is the standard by which you will be judged. And why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye, when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of the log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your friend's eye. Anybody guess what we're going to talk about today? Yeah, we are all going to sit down, close our eyes, and without judgment, if you want to leave right now because you don't want to hear us talk about judging today, you will be free to leave, okay? Let's all sit down. Everybody close your eyes for a minute. I'm just kidding, okay? We're going to talk about judging today. That's what we're going to talk about. And we're going to tear it apart. It's actually going to be a 2-part teaching. So we're going to talk about the one part of judging today. Then we're going to talk about appropriate judging. Because we take this turn, these words, do not judge, and we put it to everything in life. Well, you can't be a person who doesn't have some judgment in your life. You do that, and you're not very wise. You have to have judgment, okay? And so we're going to talk about appropriate judging next week, what that all looks like. And it is interesting that we are supposed to judge. Again, we'll talk about it next week. We are supposed to judge, but the first place we're supposed to judge is where? Is ourselves. That's who we're supposed to judge first, is ourselves. And it's interesting, in the world in the therapeutic world we live in today, when people start judging themselves or kind of doing an evaluation of this or that or something else in their life, there's always someone who wants to come along and go, oh, you're just being too hard on yourself. Because in the therapeutic world we live in, people don't want to evaluate their own lives. They want to evaluate other people's lives. But when it comes to evaluating my life, you know, just not that interested in doing it. And but Jesus said, you know, Jesus would teach, the place to start is with me. That's where the place to start is this judging me. And, you know, when he uses the word judge there, it's not the word discernment. It's not the word evaluate. It's actually the word that's used there is the word we would use, even in our own language, you know, transliterated or else brought into our own language, of when a judge, you know, takes the gavel and hits the, you know, the bench to declare guilty and put a sentence. That's the, you know, that's the word that's used there. Well, another word that could be in there, Luke will use it, we'll look at it in a minute. Luke would use the word condemn is the word he would use. He would say, don't condemn, using maybe the same teaching, maybe a different teaching, but it's more than just evaluating. It's more than just discerning. It's more than just, you know, kind of keeping score on something and how does that, you know, what should I think of this? That's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about something deeper than that. We'll get into it. You know, judging is interesting. Judging comes so naturally to us. We don't have to think about it. You know, like we don't have to sit and someone walks in the room and go, you know, I think I need to evaluate this person. I mean, we just immediately evaluate. We evaluate their appearance, we evaluate their dress, we evaluate the way they use their language, how they handle their bodies. I mean, we just evaluate all kinds of things. It just comes, it's like, I don't know, I don't want to say second nature because it's kind of like first nature to us. We just do it, and it doesn't matter where the lines are, but we just, I don't know, it's just something we do if we judge. I'll use an illustration I've used for a number of times, and so some of you, this will be repetition. If you've, you know, some of you guys that have been around 30 years, you've heard it. Scott, Sherry, you've heard it before. But it's like this. It is hard for me to tell when I have bad breath unless someone starts backing away from me. Do you know what I'm talking about? You start talking to someone, and they do like this. And then in your mind, while you're talking, and they're backing away, you're going, oh, you know, it's hard, but you know what? It is easy to tell when someone else has bad breath. You walk within any part of their circle and you smell it. Same thing with BO, bad odor, you know, body odor, same thing. It's hard to, you know, I'm good enough, you know. I mean, it's just hard to tell. But when you get near someone who's got body odor, I mean, I went to a business establishment this week two different times on two different days for two different reasons, and the person that interacted with me was behind plexiglass. You know, it's like plexiglass, and then there's one of those little holes you try to talk through, you know? And so I walk up there to the plexiglass, and I can smell the body odor from the other side of the plexiglass. Now, he's in his cubicle. I just disclosed it was a man. He's in his cubicle. And it's like, how can you not smell this in your cubicle? But it's hard for us to tell when we've got body odor, but it's easy to detect someone else's body odor. Everybody with me? So it's really easy for us to judge other people and evaluate them. But me? It's really hard. It's a hard thing to evaluate ourselves, to kind of judge ourselves. And again, we can tell when someone else is behaving, inappropriately. They're saying things they shouldn't say, all those kinds of things. There's this thing in psychology called the fundamental attribution error. Some of you have heard this before. But a fundamental attribution error. And it goes like this. That for someone else, the reason they're doing what they're doing is because of what's going on inside of them. The reason Burl, you shouldn't have sat in the front row today. You should have sat over there. Yeah. The reason Burl does the things Burl does is because there's something messed up inside of Burl. Everybody with me? Yeah. Bill says, I witnessed that. There's something wrong with inside of Burl. But when I do something I shouldn't do, you know what I do? I say, it's because of them. See, I don't do bad things. I don't say bad things. I don't have a bad attitude because there's something wrong inside of me. I have a bad attitude and say some of the things I shouldn't say because of Fred. It's Fred's fault. He's the cause of it all. And that's part of what we do when we judge people, is we judge them, we judge their motives, we judge what's going on inside of them. We judge, you know, stuff we know nothing about. And then ourselves, we make it be, we say it's caused by other people. They're the cause of it. If they didn't say that to me, if they didn't treat me that way, if they didn't act that way, I wouldn't have to do what I'm doing. But this is what I'm doing. I remember one time years ago, we might have even still been living in the little house here. Matter of fact, I think we were living in the little Parsons here. So, this, you know, 35 years ago, whatever. And I got a call one night. And it was a woman who from our church, a family from our church, and she was in the telephone booth at Naomi's. Now, if you're young enough that you don't know what a telephone booth is, it's like this little closet that the door used to open and you went in and there was a phone in there and you put some money in it, closed the door, and then you could talk. So ask your parents or Google it, but it's called a phone booth, okay? So this lady's in this phone booth and she calls and she says, I'm at the phone booth down at Naomi's and I'm in my nightgown, and she starts to tell me what had gone on in her home. And I said, well, we'll come get you, and went and got her and brought her to our house. And anyway, a few days later, I'm meeting with her husband. It was a domestic violence situation. I was meeting with her husband, and her husband, see, she was at the phone booth because something was wrong inside of her. That's the fundamental attribution error. But he is the one that sent her to the phone booth and then got picked up by the cops and taken to jail, missed time at work, and was furious, not because of him. He was furious because of what? Because of her. If she hadn't done that, then I wouldn't have done what I did. And if she hadn't done what she had done, I wouldn't have done what I did. And I wouldn't have done what I did. I wouldn't have missed my work time at work. I mean, I got to pay $500 in court fines, and I got to come up with, missed work. I mean, because it wasn't about what was going on inside of him. It was because of what's being caused. Has everybody got the picture here? This is just how judging works so often. We look at someone else and we judge them based on what's going on, what we think might be going on in their part. But we judge ourselves based on kind of the circumstances that surround us, that put us into that behavior. You know, Jesus is going to talk all about judging here, and he does it because he knew how judgmental and critical people are. And he knew that's not the way he wants people to be. See, we are judgmental. Raise your hand. Everybody, play with me here for just a second. Everybody, raise your hand, okay? Thank you for admitting you're judgmental, okay? We are all judgmental. And yet Jesus wants his people to not be judgmental. R.C. Sproul said this. He says, of all the people in this world, we are the ones who have the least right to be judgmental, harsh, and critical. I mean, we sang about what Jesus has done for us today. I mean, not one of us are sitting in this room guilt-free. We all have guilt. We all have shame. We all have things we've done that we like, oh, what in the world were you thinking? Well, it was my husband's fault. But what were we, I mean, we all have this. And yet, we sang all about our forgiveness. No power, no dominion, no authority, no one. And we sing about him being holy. Is everybody, y'all connecting with me? I mean, we have no right to have a judgmental attitude. And we should, as R.C. Sproul said, we should be the least judgmental, harsh, and critical. Now, people who wrestle with judgment more than others and have a critical spirit are right now saying, but Matt, okay, but Matt, I know all the buts, okay, I've been around a while, I know all the arguments, but just let Jesus speak to your heart, okay? Over the next few minutes, just let Jesus speak to your heart. Here's what he said. Be up on your screen. He says, do not judge others or you will not be judged. Paul said it this way, every one of you who judges is without excuse. For when you judge another, you condemn yourselves, since you, the judge, do the same things. He says this in a little bit later. He says, who are you to condemn someone else's servant? James, Jesus' brother, said it this way. He said, what right do you have to judge your neighbor? See, it's so easy for us to judge, and it's found so many places in the Scripture, this idea of judging. I mean, it is just found in so many places. Let me just walk you through two. I cut one out just for sake of time, but let me walk you through two. Jesus was heading towards Jerusalem one day, and he's on his way to be executed. So it's towards the end of his life. He's on his way to be executed. And they had to go through Samaria. Now, just a tiny bit of Bible knowledge. Samaria was the central, like there was North Whidbey and South Whidbey, and then there's Coopville, okay? That's like Samaria, okay? And you gotta go through Samaria to get to Oak Harbor. Everybody got the picture? That's kind of what it was like. Well, they're gonna go through Coopville. They're gonna go through Samaria. Now, I'm not picking on Coopville, okay? I have nothing against Coopville. Okay, but they have to go through Samaria. And Jesus, as they're heading towards Samaria, they're all on foot here, as they're heading towards Samaria, he sends a troop of people in to get things ready for their visit into this village. And as they go in there, the people make it clear they don't want Jesus to come and visit. They want Jesus to stay away. And they come back to Jesus and they say, Jesus, these people don't want us to go to their village. They don't want you to come to their village. The controversy surrounding Jesus was so intense at this point. This is why he's going to be executed. I mean, the controversy all around Jesus that gets him executed on the cross was so intense that this village in Samaria didn't want him visiting. And so when they come back and they report it, this is what James and John say to Jesus. They say, Lord, should we call down fire from heaven and burn them all up? Do you want us just to call fire from heaven and like torch Coopville? Is that what that's what they're asking? Because you know what they're saying is these disciples are going, you know what? Yeah, we do some stuff we shouldn't do, but it's because of everybody else. But these people in Samaria, they're evil on the inside. Should we just burn them up? Or how about John chapter 8? This is where the woman is caught in adultery. Again, a little bit of Bible knowledge if you don't know the story, which it's great that, you know, if you don't know the story, it's great that you're here. Thank you for being here. And thank you for being online. But in John chapter 8, Jesus, there's a story told about Jesus where he's in the temple and some religious leaders find this woman in the act of adultery. She's having sexual relations with someone who's not her husband. And they grab the woman and they drag her into the temple and they throw her down right in front of Jesus. And Jesus began, they said, Jesus, what are you going to do about this? Jesus, how are you going to judge? That's what they want to know. How are you going to judge? Are you going to judge like the law says you should judge? Are you going to judge that she's guilty and therefore should be stoned? That's the questions they ask. They're trying to catch Jesus, but that's the questions they ask. And if you remember, Jesus gets down and writes on the ground, and then he gets back up, and then he says to them the famous line, you without sin, what? Throw the first stone, okay? And then he bent down, started writing all over again. And one by one, starting, it says, with the older people in the crowd, they dropped their rocks and walked away. And then Jesus gets to the, you know, after they're all gone, Jesus says to the woman, where's all these people who were trying to condemn you, judge you? She's guilty. And they go, well, they're all gone. He says, no one's left here? No, nobody's here. And said, well, Jesus says, I don't condemn you either. Go away and sin no more. Don't do this anymore. See, the fundamental attribution error is that the religious leaders, they were all judging her because of what was going on inside of her. She was an evil woman. She was a wicked woman. She was an adulterer. She was lustful. She was, I mean, whatever it was, They put that on her. But them, their own sins, now they were the fault of someone else. They were caused by the religious system. They were caused by the culture. They were caused by the environment. They were caused by the economics. They were caused by whatever. People come up with 1,000 excuses why we do what we do. But there's usually one excuse why someone else does it. It's because they're messed up inside. They just got something wrong inside them. So they're trying to judge, again, her based on what's going on inside, and they don't know anything about. You know, years ago, I read this story, and it was an Ann Landers story. Some of you will remember me telling this story before, and some of you have heard it before from other sources, but I read this story, and it was a letter went to Ann Landers. She was an advice, those of you that don't know, she was an advice columnist that was syndicated throughout newspapers across the country and so on. And someone wrote a letter, and it was a lady that was working at the checkout stand at the grocery store, and a woman had come through the grocery checkout line, and she had used food coupons, you know, government food money, to buy a $17 cake. And the lady, the checker who's writing this letter, she says, you know, I don't use my hard-earned money to buy a $17 cake. And she's using the money that I paid my taxes, my hard-earned living, to go and buy this cake, you know, with the food coupons. And she was furious about it. Well, a lot of people responded to all kinds of different things. But one lady responded. She says, I am the woman, she's assuming, I'm the woman who bought the $17 cake and paid for it. This is her exact words. And paid for it with food stamps. I thought the checkout woman in the store would burn a hole through me with her eyes. What she didn't know is the cake was for my little girl's birthday. It will be her last. She has bone cancer and will probably be gone in 6 to 8 months. See, the fundamental attribution error is that the checker lady was assuming this lady, like, she's messed up. She's taking my taxpayer dollars and she's using the food coupons to buy a cake. I would never do that. Assuming she knows what's going on in this woman's life. Assuming she knows what the circumstances are. Which had no knowledge. Now, how many times have all of us done the same exact thing? We know nothing about what's going on in their lives. And we jump to a conclusion. You know, we just make some judgment upon the person. That's what Jesus is talking about. That's what he's talking about. And he goes on. He says, why worry about it? It'll be up on your screen again. He says, why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own eye? And how can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get that speck out of your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? Hypocrite, first get rid of that log in your own eye, then you will see well enough to deal with the speck in your own eye. Everybody gets the picture. You know, your friend has a little tiny piece of sawdust in the corner of his eye, and, you know, maybe he's doing the blinking thing, and maybe he's watering, and you're like, let me help you. And you got this, you can't even get close to him because you got this big old plank sticking out of your head. It's like, can't you see? I mean, that's the picture Jesus has drawn here. And it's interesting. He says, why do you worry about the speck in your neighbor's eye? He doesn't just say, why do you observe the speck in your neighbor's eye? You're like, why do you notice the speck in your neighbor's eye? He's saying, why do you think about it? I mean, when he says worry, why do you worry about it? What he's talking about is, why do you fixate upon the speck in your, why do you fixate on that little thing going on in that person's life while you got this other stuff going on in your life? Deal with your stuff first. That's what he's talking about, is deal with your stuff. Again, you know, in some of these places, this like I don't know where you're attributing all of this or where you're applying all this, but sometimes we attribute it to, like, our work setting. Like, yeah, okay, I'm pretty judgmental at work. But what about when you apply it in your home setting? As a husband, you will judge your wife based on, there's something wrong with this woman. And you might have heard me say it before. You know, like, years ago it was like they're selfish. And then it was like they're bipolar. Now it's they're narcissist. Well, we're all narcissists at some level. That's what selfishness means. That's what self-centered means. Now, there's a clinical narcissism, and I'm not talking about that. But I mean, I can't tell you over the last 5 years, maybe a little longer than that, how many people I've had appointments with, and they go, he's just a narcissist. What we're saying is, there's something messed up inside this guy. Now, me, if it wasn't messed up inside of him, I could be the wife I'm supposed to be. But the reason I'm not responding the way I should, because of him. Everybody get the picture? I mean, apply it in your home. Forget about your work world first. What about your home? What about, no, don't apply it to school. What about in your home? Parents judging their kids, kids judging their parents, you know, adult kids judging their adult parents, and vice versa. I mean, just the whole quagmire of family relationships is partially connected to exactly what we're talking about here. Deal with the log in our own eye, Jesus says, first. Then we can start trying to help. He's not saying don't tell the other person you got a speck and let me help you get that speck out. He actually says then you will be able to help them. But you can't help them when you can't see because you got this plank hanging out of your face. That's what he's talking about. So you need to deal with your stuff. One of the things, I should have brought my chart up here, but one of the things I do sometimes when I meet with a couple or any relationship thing is, and I got this from Andy Stanley, this is not my thing, but I'll draw a big old circle on this piece of paper and I'll hand the pen to the person and I'll say, okay, in the, what we're talking about right now, what percentage of the pie is your fault? Okay. Now, very seldom does the person take that pencil and go like 3/4 of the pie is my fault. They'll say, 1/4 of the pie is my fault. And 3/4 of the pie problem is the other person's fault. Everybody got the picture here? Okay. So like draw the circle. Okay, Matt, how much of this is you and how much of this is Barbara? Well, that much of it's her. Okay. Yeah, I'm guilty, but it's just that little, like it's not even really 2 pieces of pie. But then I'll challenge them and say, okay, and can you do anything about all of this 2/3 of my pie, that Barbara? Can you do anything about that? If you could do something about it, you would have already changed the other person. But what you can do something about is that part of the pie that you're responsible for. Everybody got the picture? And that's where Jesus is saying. He says, forget about the speck in the other person's eye and take care of your piece of the pie. Because once you take care of your piece of the pie, you might be able to do something about the other person's pie. You might be able to help them. He says, why do we worry? Why do we fixate? Why do we go on this? One more illustration, prodigal son. So that if you don't know the story, again, a little bit of Bible knowledge, Jesus tells this parable. It's a made-up story, but it's about a man who has 2 sons. He owns a farm. He's very wealthy. And the younger son says, I want my inheritance. And so he says to the father, I want my inheritance. I want my inheritance. And the father finally writes him a check and sends him away with his inheritance. Okay? And the older son stays home. He's working the field. He's managing the farm. He's taking care of the livestock, all the whole thing. He's doing all that needs to be done. And the younger son, he gets that check, he goes down and catches it, and then he starts spending it, and it says, on wild living. I mean, all kinds of partying and buying, you know, drinks for other people and, you know, whatever, however he's spending all this money. But eventually, he spends all of his inheritance, and then he has to figure out how he's going to feed himself. So he goes to work for a pig farmer, and for a Jew, that would be a no-no. But he goes to work for this pig farmer, and he's feeding these pigs. And eventually, he's looking at the pig food going, man, I just wish I could have some of that. Because if I had some of that, I'd have something to eat. And then, I love this line, one of my favorite lines in the Bible. It says, and he came to his senses. I pray that for people, and I pray that for my kids. I pray, man, I just pray, Lord, help them come to their senses. Because when someone comes to their senses, they begin to think about life differently. And it says he came to his senses and said, I'll just go home and hire myself out to my dad, and then I'll have the stuff I need. And he goes back and hires himself out to his dad, and his dad's waiting for him, and his dad's all excited when he sees him, runs to him, hugs him, kisses him, and then he calls his household servant and says, hey, you know, butcher the fattened calf, let's have a party. And they got this party going, there's all this noise going on and dancing and whatever else, and the older brother comes into the field, and he's furious. He's furious. Because he says, I've always done what's right. And you're giving that guy, you're giving Burl a party as messed up as Burl is. He spent all of his inheritance. Now he's coming back wanting some more inheritance. Really? Fundamental attribution error. But for him, I have always done what's right. If anything's not been right, and the reason I'm acting this way, and he was angry, wouldn't come in. He's throwing a temper tantrum. I wouldn't be throwing this temper tantrum right now if you hadn't treated him that way. He's mad at his younger brother, and he's mad at his dad. He's got a log in his eye, and he's worried about the speck. He came to his senses. Now, let me see. Okay, I'm out of time. Let me jump on to a couple things here, and we'll close. Go to the slide that says, do not judge others, by Luke. Probably, there we go, that one. Here's how Luke said it. He said, do not judge others, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn others, or it will come back against you. Forgive others, and you will be forgiven. What he's talking about is, he says, if you judge, you're going to be judged. If you condemn, you're going to be condemned. If you withhold forgiveness, forgiveness is going to be withheld from you. It's like what goes around comes around. You know, it's the law of sowing and reaping. You sow judgment, judgment's going to come on you. You sow, you know, unforgiveness, unforgiveness is going to come on you. It's those whole principles of, you know, sowing and reaping. And James says it this way. He says, there will be no mercy for those who have not shown mercy to others. But if you have been merciful, God will be merciful when he judges you. See, there are benefits, there are consequences to judging, and there are benefits to not judging. Let me just talk about that for just a minute. The consequences of judging is you will be judged. Well, I judge all the time. I've not been judged. Just wait. Because what we do is we have this thing where we just keep doing a behavior till we have a consequence to pay. Well, you don't want to keep doing the behavior of judging until the consequence comes back on you. Stop now before you build up a bank account of judgment against you. Everybody get the picture? That's what the consequence and condemnation. Consequences. See, we keep pointing the finger because nothing ever happens when we point the finger. One of the things that's happening when we point the finger at other people is we are playing the devil's game. Revelation 12:10 says that he's the accuser of the brothers. And his accusations that he brings against you and me and other people is never for our good. It is always to tear us down, to destroy us, to bring... What does the devil come to do? Kill, steal, and destroy. Well, I'm just trying to help them. No, you're not. You're joining in with the accuser of the brothers is what you're doing right now. You're playing life by the enemy's game. That's one of the consequences of the whole thing. We get wrapped up in thinking we got this wrong. Isaiah says, let me tell you the blessing. Isaiah says this, Isaiah 58. He says, stop pointing your... This is 700 years before Jesus taught about do not judge in the Sermon on the Mount. He says, stop pointing your finger and spreading vicious rumors and help those in trouble. Then your light will shine out from the darkness and the darkness around you will be as bright as noon. See, the consequences of judging are like, you know, you're going to be judged. You're going to be condemned. You're not going to be free. You know, all those things. That's the consequences of judging. But the benefits, he says, man, if you stop pointing the finger, stop spreading word, you know, all this stuff, he says, then your light, who doesn't want this? Then your light will shine out from the darkness, and the darkness around you will be bright as day. That's what we want, isn't it? I mean, don't we want that, the blessing of God? Okay, two people in the room do. Or think about the atmosphere that judging creates versus non-judging creates. The atmosphere, the weather, the emotional atmosphere, the emotional weather. David says this. He said, how wonderful and pleasant it is when brothers live together in harmony. Who wants to swim in a world filled with judgment and condemnation? Nobody wants to swim in that. I mean, I don't have time. Peter said it this way. Last verse, Peter said it this way. Don't repay evil for evil. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That's what God has called you to do, and He will grant you His blessing. He says, don't repay evil for evil. We just don't get in that game. And then he says, the blessing of God will be poured out upon you. And that's what we want. Let me ask a couple questions and we're going to pray. Are you prepared for God to judge you with the same standard you're judging other people? And if you're not, Jesus help you not judge. Or are you prepared to be condemned? They're just hard words. Or on the other side, do you want that blessing of the Lord? This is what God's asked us to do, he says, Peter says. And the blessing that comes in it. Amen? I mean, that's what we want. That's what we want. Now we'll talk. Now some of you I know are going, but Matt, I know I'm only telling half the story. You'll get the other half of the story next week, okay? There'll be plenty to chew on for next week when we talk about appropriate judging. Okay, let's stand together. Let me pray. And if you've not been baptized in water and you want to be baptized coming up on the 26th, meet me in a few minutes. It'll take me about 10 minutes, but in the room over by the Christian school kiosk, which is in that corner of the foyer. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you for your word that does surgery in our heart, that is a mirror that shows us where we got broccoli in our teeth. Thank you for that. Lord, just keep working in our hearts, keep working in our spirits. Those of us in this room, those online, keep working, Father, in us. That we want to be people who experience your blessing upon our lives. So teach us, Lord. Lord, help us this week when we encounter one of these situations. Help us to turn away from the fundamental attribution error where we would judge someone else by their attitudes and us by our conditions. Instead, we would just leave it alone and say, who am I to judge another person's servant? And we would leave it be. So keep doing your work inside of us, Jesus. We need it. We need it desperately. We need it desperately. As Bud used to sing, mercy drops around us are falling, but for your showers we plead for your mercy, God. So do your work inside of us. In Jesus' name, amen.